Coming up on today's podcast, we'll talk about the 1,093 horsepower Porsche Taycan Turbo GT unveiled in a live stream yesterday. An ID3 GTX is coming and Rivian's postal vans. Plus, stay tuned because later in the show, I'll tell you what the big battery makers are saying their focus is between now and the end of the decade. Well, good morning, good afternoon, or good evening, wherever you're listening around the world. Welcome to EV News Daily, your trusted source of EV information for Tuesday, 12th of March. I'm Martin Lee, and it's my job to go through hundreds, sometimes thousands, of EV articles a day from around the world and filter them into 20 or 30 minutes so you know exactly what's going on. It's like a TLDR of the EV world. And I've been doing it for over 2,000 episodes. Check out the archive at evnewsdaily.com. We go live at 5 p.m. That's UK. That's midday Eastern every weekday. Patreon supporters get the episodes ad-free and first. Be like them by clicking on a link in the show notes. We'll start with news of the Porsche Taycan Turbo GT. We knew it was coming and we didn't know the name. We suspected it was going to be this and we got confirmation it's the Turbo GT because somebody got in the Turbo S and thought, you know what, this car's far too slow. Let's make a Turbo GT version. It's very Porsche, isn't it? And it's still in pre-production phase, but it looks incredible. It's clocked a remarkable lap time on the Nürburgring, a new speed record for four-door electric vehicles at the track. It surpasses previous benchmarks set by high-performance cars like the fellow Porsche 991 GT2 RS, the 918 Spider, the Cayman GT4 RS Club Sport, and all these vehicles, which you think would dominate because they're combustion vehicles, all just been bested by electric power. So let's have a look for my YouTube viewers at the vehicle, and I'll give you some more details while we do that. The Taycan Turbo GT holds the Nürburgring record for the fastest four-door car at 7 minutes, 7 seconds, 0.55, outpacing, obviously, the Tesla Model S Plaid and the previous versions of the Taycan, and being so close to the Rimac Nevera, which is slightly bonkers because that is a hypercar. And this is a car that, in theory, well, if you had $230,000, you could go and buy. Now, the live stream showed us a purple version of this with the Vysac package, big old spoiler on the back and some extra aero stuff. I'll get into that. Development driver Lars Kern behind the wheel for the Nürburgring and the Laguna Seca lap times as well, showcasing the Turbo GT's superior performance at Laguna Seca, which was the video that Porsche put out yesterday. It was another record, a 1 minute 27.87 lap time, surpassing Tesla Model S Plaid's best version quite handily, actually. Now, Porsche introduced upgrades to the Taycan 2025 lineup with a new rear motor and a pulse inverter made with silicon carbide. It's more efficient, has high power delivery. Turbo GT variants have up to 1,093 horsepower with launch control activated and feature an attack mode that increases the power by another 161 horsepower. Acceleration 0 to 60 miles an hour, that's just under 0 to 100 kph, is 2.2 seconds for the, you know, the slow standard one, and 2.1 seconds if you opt for the free Vysac package, because that adds some stuff, but it deletes things as well. Like the rear seats, it becomes just a two-seater. Key performance details of the Turbo GT is range, charge speed, and its ability to do multiple laps. We don't know, kept under wraps. But after the Nürburgring run, they did say that the high track, the high endurance of the vehicle was consistent, and it would do more of, you know, more than just one lap. It is potentially the most track capable electric car available in the world for a half decent price. And, you know, I'm fully aware of how crazy that sounds, but I'm saying it's not a Rimac Nevera. It's not a $2 million hypercar. Standard equipment is going to involve LED lights, active ride height suspension, carbon fiber accents, 21-inch lightweight wheels, and new exclusive colors as well, like the purple sky metallic we've seen in the video if you're watching the YouTube version of this. And the Turbo GT pricing starts at $230,000, like I say, but they're going to sell none for that, because if you're spending that much money on a Porsche, you're going to dip into the options list, aren't you? I got a few links to throw into the show notes if you want to find out more. Okay, moving on. The next Uber you get could be a very luxurious electric service. Uber is introducing its premium electric vehicle rideshare option, Comfort Electric, is what it's called in New York City, marking its most significant market expansion so far. Comfort Electric allows you to book rides in a high-end EV, and by that they define that as a Tesla, a Polestar, a Mustang Mach-E, now available in 41 cities, including New York City. The launch made possible after they lifted their cap on EV ride-hailing licenses restricted by the Taxi and Limousine Commission. The service enhances the traditional Uber comfort option by offering extra legroom and premium features and a ride in a premium EV. Comfort Electric operates alongside Uber Green, a service that incentivizes drivers with an additional fee for using EVs. Uber partnering with Revel in New York, for instance, and they're a sort of former electric moped service now using Tesla Model Ys, for instance, getting into charging, and they're going to offer Uber drivers up to 25% off charging fees at Revel's Brooklyn charging hub. And that does remain, I think that's the key, is how, where can we, if we are going to have EV working vehicles, how can we separate them from EV personal vehicles? And, you know, I'm not kind of being elitist or when they're talking down to people that use EVs as working vehicles, but we've seen it already, plenty of working vehicles, whether that is maintenance vans for, I don't know, your telephone company or whatever, they're all going electric, which is fantastic. And then we turn up at DC fast charging hubs and they are, I'm going to say blocking, it's the wrong word, but we, I guess that's a different case. But taxis, for instance, which are going to be recharging a lot, we see it in London with the black cabs. There's nothing wrong with them doing that. They are as entitled as anybody else. But if we can have separate facilities that mean that they're in the right locations, maybe they get a discount, the right price, the right speed chargers as well, that have the right facilities for those drivers to take a, you know, a comfort break and a safe break, then all these things, you know, need to be thought about. But either way, this is fantastic news. So last week on the podcast, I mentioned that in Seoul, there was a big industry event for batteries. And I thought I'd have a look at some of the news that came out of that. I did report that on the podcast last week. But I think one of the themes that came out of it, if you try and read the room, was fast charging and accurate charging as well. And I've got more on this a little bit later, so carry on watching if you're interested. But one of those stories was LG and Qualcomm are partnering and using Qualcomm chips to improve the battery management system of our EVs. The collaboration is all about enhancing the precision of the BMS. That means battery management system. And it incorporates the latest Qualcomm chips and the software working together to monitor and control battery health, current voltage, temperature, and even optimize safety as well. The system designed to manage the performance of the battery cells efficiently, managing things like fire risks as well. Qualcomm's Snapdragon digital chassis platform is going to be integrated with LG and, you know, car manufacturers as well to bring together the latest technologies like autonomous driving, connectivity, entertainment, and cloud services as well. And more on what came out of this big event in just a little bit. Let's get an update on Volkswagen's ID3 GTX then. VW set to introduce a high-performance version of the ID3, the GTX version, positioning itself as an electric counterpart to the iconic Golf GTI. A teaser has been shared on social media, on LinkedIn, indicating its imminent launch. Well, a teaser for this showed that the ID3 will distinguish itself with some unique exterior designs, also some different interiors as well. But what we're interested in, really, aren't we, is this more potent drivetrain on an ID3. Now, we have seen it testing in cold weather conditions. That indicates that the development is going well, and we think it will diverge from the traditional four-wheel drive ID3, or rather GTX badging, because the GTX badging was meant to be four-wheel drive, but we think this is going to be a two-wheel drive, almost certainly, because it is there's not enough space, really, in the ID3 to re-engineer that vehicle and add two motors. So we think it's going to be a dual motor, which is very interesting. And of course, a rear wheel drive configuration, which is, you know, in contrast to GTI cars as well. And so we think it'll have the new VW AP550 electric motor. We've seen that in the ID7. The ID Buzz is going to get it as well. 282 horsepower, loads of torque as well. And so on a smaller vehicle like the ID3, that is going to be like an 80 or 85 horsepower bump on the Pro S version, and so hopefully this is not too far away if they're teasing it on their LinkedIn page. I'll pop a link in the show notes if you'd like to read more about that yourself. Next, we'll talk about a new affordable EV from Škoda. They're gearing up to reveal an entry-level small SUV, they say, That just means a slightly taller, small car, doesn't it, these days? It's not really an SUV in what I think is an SUV. A starting price of £21,000, aligning it with the upcoming Cupra Ravel and the ID2. So Autocar magazine here in the UK have got a mock-up of what that could look like. I'll show that on screen for our YouTube viewers. This announcement came via social media, with Skoda hinting at the possible introduction in its yearly press conference coming soon. And this is... you know, these small vehicles are designed to have, you know, like the chunky wheel arches. Maybe they're a little bit taller sometimes and they want to sort of evoke the feeling of being a small SUV, but they're not, are they? They're small cars. When you look at the design language of this, I think this is, you know, perfect for small, you know, European city, small car fans. And I love stuff like this. In fact, it doesn't matter where you live around the world. If you like a car like this, I think this looks very cool. And as we've seen from the Volkswagen Group before with their small EVs, to get a small EV from, you know, Seat, Skoda and VW, they've done that before. They could well be doing this again with their small version of the MEB, the MEB entry platform, suggesting a possible couple of battery sizes for this: 38 kilowatt hours or 56 kilowatt hours. That's going to be, you know, mid 200s or late 200s in terms of miles of range on a what is a big battery in a small vehicle. So we'll keep on watching that one, but very exciting that lower price, smaller EVs not only on the way, but not only from the Chinese companies, on the way from the big manufacturers as well. Bit of Rivian news now, and Morgan Olson, a long-standing manufacturer of step vans, has partnered with Rivian to make electric delivery vans for Canada Post. Rivian will provide the skateboard platform, and their CEO praising Rivian's EV chassis and the platform as the most reliable and well-tested out there in the market right now. It's going to be called the C250E, and it marks the first application of Rivian's skateboard platform outside its own Amazon vehicles, signifying a big milestone for these companies. Rivian adjusting the chassis a little bit for right-hand drive. Obviously, if it's a step van, often the door is always open for postal services, and you know, you jump out onto the pavement side, as it were, using a standard platform with minimal changes needed, they say. The partnership opening up the possibilities for Rivian-based electric delivery vehicles across North America, following the end of Amazon's exclusivity rights to Rivian's commercial van platform. Next up, Fiat and the 500e. No longer a compliance vehicle in North America. Now it's the real deal. It's on its own platform. It's a proper EV. It looks just like the outside styling of a Fiat 500, but it's a proper custom-designed electric vehicle. We've had it here in Europe, along with the 600 as well. And this is a cracking vehicle with a decent-sized 40 kilowatt-hour plus battery. And it's introducing two new versions for the 2024 model year for my US listeners and viewers. Inspired, they say, by music and beauty. So let's find out what they are. The music trim is meant to make the car look like a tuxedo, with tuxedo black exterior, a chrome door detailing, a cream interior, that's the tuxedo bit, and a premium JBL sound system. The beauty version dazzles with a rose gold exterior, enhancing the appeal beyond the features of the previously red versions, or the inspired, if that makes sense. But you know, the red versions they do. This is rose gold, but it's sort of erring on the side of pinky. But, you know, not to be too much of a cliche, but my wife would absolutely adore this vehicle. Both trims come with upgraded amenities like the vinyl dashboard, protection on the door sill plates, heated mirrors, chrome accenting, and heated seats as well. And there's enhanced ADAS stuff as well. Driver assistance in both models, lane keep assist, 360-degree camera and parking sensors, blind spot monitoring, adaptive cruise, and automatic high beam headlights as well. Now, Fiat hinting at future collaborations with fashion houses. I can see a Prada version as well coming back, and destination themes. So that, you know, picking cities around the world and having, you know, versions of cars. It's a very lifestyle-y thing to do, and I understand why they're doing that. The brand is exploring other Fiat models to come into the US too, and I hope they sell really well, because we love those vehicles over here. Some months they can be the number one selling, you know, the 500's number one selling vehicle, EV, in certain markets. The bigger 600 model hopefully, I'd love that to come to US shores as well. And we also saw recently a presentation of the concept Panda, and that signifies that they've got some big plans for the Fiat brand as well, which we love to see. Okay, let's come back to some of that battery news that I promised we would talk about today. A couple more stories to get through on today's podcast. And South Korea's top battery manufacturers were all showing off their wares last week, and amidst an intensifying effort to reduce EV prices and battery costs coming down. It turned out that the theme running through it was really the critical factor that they're all working on, and that is reducing battery charge times. Now, it's something that, you know, is important. I never think of it as the defining thing that we need to fix with the move to electrification. It's very important, of course, but the adoption of EVs, they say, is unlikely without the ability to recharge as swiftly as refueling combustion and having that parity of experience. Now, car makers are leaning towards finding batteries that offer very fast recharge times. Those stories are coming out of China that we see as well of, you know, 400-500 kilowatt DC fast charging. The latest BYD and CATL batteries can certainly take some of those charge speeds. But a new piece of research the battery makers have done in South Korea is talking about how they found, it's a global piece of research, that the number one thing that people talk about in terms of holding them back from buying an EV was the speed of charging. I'll talk about a couple of examples. For instance, Samsung is the seventh largest EV battery producer globally. They announced plans last week to mass produce batteries by 2026 that will have a 600 kilometer range, that's 373 miles, and recharge to 80% in just 9 minutes. Whereas SK On, I got a picture of one of their cells on screen for our YouTube viewers. It's the world's fifth largest EV battery maker. Showed off a battery capable of charging, 600 kilometres, 373 miles, within 15 minutes to get to 80% at that recent industry event in Seoul. SK haven't got the same timelines as their competitors. Samsung and LG are aiming for, you know, 2026 cars to actually be on the road. SK said that 2030 is a more reasonable date for these vehicles to be on the road that can charge very quickly. And again, the charge times coming down, and I think all of them have this magical number of 5 minutes as a timeline, whether that is late in the decade, early in the next decade, of a battery that can charge to 80% or even further deeper into the pack in just 5 minutes. And they feel that will be the point at which we have the parity of experience with combustion. Now, to give my opinion on this, I applaud it. I think it's wonderful. I can't wait to see what comes out. I mean, what comes out of China at the minute is kind of science fiction, next level stuff. But really, whether it's 2026 or 2030, that we're recharging our cars in 10 minutes, 12 minutes or 5 minutes or less, that's incredible. Long-term listeners of this podcast know that whilst DC fast charging is exciting and gets talked about a lot, I have more interest in level one and level two charging and how that changes everything, because DC fast charging is almost the exciting, sexy thing that we talk about, because it blows my mind that we can do that with technology very, very shortly. It's coming out of the lab. It's in test vehicles now, and it's on the road in some places in China. But what is far less sexy is how your car charges overnight, whether that's on street in your driveway, how apartment block owners and the boards of management solve AC charging overnight, how cars can feed back into the grid, how we can actually reduce our electric grids by using our vehicles, how cars, home storage, solar panels, microgeneration, it's going to completely change how we power our lives. So I think that's the bigger win, but no one's ever going to talk about that because it's not very sexy. But that's where I spend a long time reading those articles and thinking a lot about level one, level two charging. How can we charge a car at 3 or 7 or maybe 22 kilowatts in the future that changes so much about the way that our lives are powered? But I won't go on about it now because, like I say, no one really finds it very interesting. But maybe I'll do like a weekend special that nobody will listen to, and I'll just have fun doing it, because I think that's where the source is. But anyway, I'll pop a link into the show notes of that article if you'd like to read more. Now let's talk about how used EVs versus used combustion cars will change the kind of cars that we buy second hand. A new Cox Automotive forecast indicating a sharp decline. And when I say sharp decline, I mean a 69% decline in the supply of used combustion vehicles by just 2028, in the blink of an eyelid, driven by the focus to moving towards EVs. Now, car dealers are being advised by this Cox study to adapt to the changing market dynamics, which will see a decrease of combustion, an increase of EVs. But they say the shift will be fast and it will happen quickly, and the competition among dealers for high demand used vehicles will intensify, especially considering the production shortfall of 3.1 million cars since 2020 and the kind of COVID pandemic that happened. The shift part of a broader change in the vehicle market, including transformations in the global car park, highlighted performance of things like hybrids, the transitional move to EV and what dealers stock on their courts and forecourts, and the diminishing role of even diesel as well. Now, they kind of sum it up in six summaries at the very end of this PDF, if you haven't got time to read the whole thing. And they say, takeaway number one, the combustion car park, which is, you know, the amount of cars on the road, is aging year on year, impacting availability and choice in the 0 to 4 year old bracket of nearly new car, used cars that you'll sell, and they'll be gone long before 2035. It says rethink your stock portfolio. Number two is the diesel decline in new car market share. That's going to plummet by 2028. Embrace the EV wave, they say. Volatility persists. Unstable used EV prices are not helped by the original equipment manufacturers. New market tactics leaving second-hand EVs vulnerable to retail competition. Number four, availability of hybrids. Not the preference of what people drive is driving many people to drive a hybrid just because they can get them. Number five, EV and combustion price parity is likely to stem from rising ICE prices. We don't talk about that enough, do we? And number six, narrowing the choice. Consumers considering combustion will have to act soon because of decreasing options in the market. If you'd like to read this whole thing, I'll pop a link in the show notes to that Cox study. Couple more bits of news today then, and Leap Motor is next, delivering their C10 SUV. And you say, yes, but it's a China-only car. Why do you keep talking about China, Martin? I have been for the last 4 or 5 years, 6 years maybe on this podcast, and I will carry on doing it till everybody understands what's really happening there and the seismic shift. And it's why so many lawmakers and Western CEOs of car companies have got squeaky bums, because the Chinese cars are coming like this, the Leap Motor C10. This has begun deliveries. It marks the occasion with ceremonies in multiple cities, and the batch size, the first batch of cars, wasn't specified, but the C10 is their premier model for the global market. It comes in a pure BEV form as an SUV, and I keep talking about how we've seen the Stellantis investment of taking a stake and then saying, well, we can resell those vehicles and we have exclusive rights to resell these vehicles outside of China. Therefore, is it Stellantis selling the vehicle or is it Leap Motor selling the vehicle in Europe and the US? Now, the C10 BEV is offered in four different variants. It starts at 128,000 RMB. That's $18,000. $18,000 for a very competent SUV. And like I say, is it a Stellantis car? Is it going to, if BYD have a Mexican factory, is that a Mexican car, or is it a Chinese car for the purpose of selling it in North America, in the US, in Canada? Let's find out. A Bloomberg article only recently talking about how BYD sent a group of top execs to Mexico to scout out potential locations for a facility. Company officials met with Jalisco's state representatives and visited Chinese suppliers in the area, having a look at where they could make BYD cars in Mexico. The projected investment would be something around $600 million US equivalent for a production site of electric vehicles in the area. Details on the visit and potential plant are completely confidential, of course. BYD aiming to expand their business in Mexico through innovation and technology sectors. They say Mexico becoming a focal point for Chinese investment. Not only that, but also Tesla investment announcing a big mega factory in Nuevo León, which has not exactly got off the ground yet, although they are pressuring Tesla to get that initial phase up and running. Alongside BYD, other Chinese automakers like Chery and JAC are also eyeing Mexico and boosting their investments there. I would simply say, watch this space. We finish off today by talking about how Western brands like Tesla and Apple are seeing their market share declining because of the preference for domestically made products in China. Apple has seen its market share decline to the likes of Huawei, particularly after the latter launched their Mate 60 Pro with a domestic processor late last year. There's an ongoing push within Chinese state agencies as well to get rid of your Apple iPhones, to ditch the iPhone and have a local brand. That has been been intensifying lately. Government workers and educators are being encouraged to switch to Huawei phones. They're given 20% off or 25% off. People come into their workplaces, you know, with big boxes of phones, and you're being told with no indication of when and by what date you must get rid of your iPhone and buy a domestically made China product. Maybe it's patriotism, you could call it, or maybe it is an intense focus on fueling domestic brands over the likes of Tesla, over the likes of Apple, with ones like Huawei. Apple smartphone sales in China are down by 24% in the early weeks of the year. Huawei is flying, for instance, and they're all having to price cut. Tesla is facing these challenges and offering significant discounts on the Model 3, Model Y in China just to sustain sales. Now, China's share of the EV market is decreasing. It was 7.9% this time last year. Now it's 6.6%. As those Western companies, which were embraced, well, it was a joint venture they had to do. You know, Western car companies haven't been able to have 100% owned things in China until Tesla came along. And all part of that was knowledge sharing and picking the brains of Western companies and working out how to make premium products. And in case any of the listeners of this show or viewers are still under the apprehension that it's just Chinese crap, that it falls apart after 5 minutes, that it's not premium, it's like secondhand knockoffs and stuff like that. It really isn't. And it's just something that I think needs to always be discussed and watched and things like that. And certainly Tesla are having a tough time in China. Still doing okay at the moment. And that's your podcast for today. Thank you so much for listening, as always. If you're not yet subscribed to the audio version of this show, you can point your podcast app, yeah, Apple, Spotify. I use Overcast just because I do. And it's very good, by the way. You can point that towards EV News Daily when you get your podcast. If you're not already a podcast listener, it's not scary. It's just audio programs. But if you are a podcast listener, search EV News Daily, add it to your feed. And that way, if you don't get to listen to it because you're doing the YouTube version, you can just delete it. But it's always good to have it next time you're walking the dog or at the gym or something. Thanks to everyone on Patreon who supports the show. They get the show first and ad-free. And the premium partners of this show get a daily mention. That's Porsche of the Village in Cincinnati, Audi of Cincinnati East, and Volvo Cars of Cincinnati East. National Car Charging on the US mainland and Aloha Charge in Hawaii. Derek Riley from Nevo.ie and the Nevo EV Review Island YouTube channel. Octopus Electroverse, global public charging made simple with one app and one map, and Lease Plan Electric Moments, providing all the tools and guidance EV drivers need. Have a good and see you tomorrow. And remember, there is no such thing as a self-charging hybrid.